Legoland Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you for joining us for the third episode of the week of the Calcioland podcast. And today we have a fun episode coming up for you. We are going to wrap up the Alisson to Liverpool deal, kind of look at the aftermath of that, discuss the impact of Milan's big win on the appeal with UEFA, answer some of your transfer questions, and we have a great interview with our friend Aaron Gialanella, Radi Campania on Twitter, about Napoli and some Serie A players to look out for during the season. And this episode is brought to you by our great friends at Euro Fantasy League. As we get closer to the Serie A season, we're going to give you more fantasy football tips. We're going to have our own fantasy calcio league for Calcioland on Euro Fantasy League. So we look forward to that. So I'm joined by our great friend, the co-host, producer of the podcast, maker of fantastic videos on Twitter, Alex Goldberg. So Alex, I was thinking a lot about this. Alisson to Liverpool became official, the most expensive transfer for a keeper ever. I've noticed, you know, a lot of tweets, a lot of takes on, you know, that's a lot of money to spend on a keeper, almost like it's not an important premium position. So I wanted to ask you, what's your take about that? Do you really think we should make a big distinction between how much you spend on a keeper than, say, a player in another role?
No, because first of all, isn't the goalkeeper pretty damn important, David? They save the shots from going in. You can have a team like Manchester City or Liverpool. Now, one could say, well, Liverpool doesn't have a good keeper, and I'll give you that. But overall, you could have a team that can score 4 or 5 goals a game. But if you're also letting that many up, you're not going to be a very good team. That's not to say that there haven't been good teams to win big titles that have had lackluster keepers. But the keeper is very important in my mind. Now, however, I do prefer this, David. Now, we're talking about prices and everything. So to give you an example, people are talking about Jan Oblak from Atletico Madrid. I'm no reporter, but I don't think he's very available. And I know he has a nice release clause, and it's fairly high. Now, people are saying, well, he's worth it, so just pay it. Well, I would draw a line with a price tag with a keeper because I much prefer, and this is just me, I much prefer the keeper that has no brain farts, and yes, that's what I call it, no brain farts, as opposed to the supremely talented keeper that sometimes doesn't make the ordinary saves. So, and I assume the price tags usually line up. If you have immense talent but a couple brain farts, you still kind of have that higher price tag than maybe the quote-unquote boring keeper, but who makes all of the normal standard saves. I want that standard, sturdy keeper. A keeper I can reference it for an example is, and he has turned a corner, is Hugo Lloris. Lloris had a good World Cup. He really did well. And overall, he's a very talented keeper. But Lloris has a whole highlight reel of brain fart after brain fart after brain fart. I would rather take a keeper that's a little less talented for probably a little less money and just have that keeper because I can trust them. But with that said, I don't think people should be saying, oh, why would you pay that much for a keeper? Because come on, keepers are very, very important. So to a certain extent, I agree that you shouldn't overspend, but let's not say that goalkeepers are not important because they certainly are. So that's my opinion, David. What about you?
Well, first of all, I'm biased because as I was growing up, I was a keeper. So maybe I have an inflated opinion of the importance of the position. But I think it's just so key. I mean, you just have to look at the last Champions League final. Even in the World Cup, we saw how some goalkeeper blunders really come back to bite you. Like, it's a very cruel position. Players at every position make mistakes during a match. But when a keeper makes a mistake, it almost always costs a goal. So I actually think, you know, now that we have these super teams in a lot of leagues, we only have, you know, so many teams that have a realistic chance at winning the Champions League. Like, you have to have that great keeper that's going to help you in the big moment. And, you know, when I look at the deal, I look at it, you know, my rule of thumb with transfer fees is that ultimately there's two things that matter about it. Will the player succeed or will he flop? If the player succeeds, nobody's going to remember the transfer fee or really care, or you're going to say that player was a bargain. And the other thing is the margin cost. And this applies to really any transfer. To me, a transfer fee matters if by overspending for a player, you can't address another position in need. And that really doesn't seem to be a problem for Liverpool, who's done really well this transfer window. And, you know, he obviously addresses a major weakness for the club. The other thing that I always like to say, when you see clubs making multiple deals, you know, in a few years among themselves, you know, maybe don't look at them so much in a vacuum. Liverpool definitely got a pretty good, more than a good bargain on Salah. Maybe there'll be more deals between Roma and Liverpool in the coming years. You know, obviously the two owners are based in Boston. They've done a lot of business together. So I actually think this deal is a home run for all involved. We talked about it on Wednesday. And I do think you're going to see more and more that the top, top clubs that want to really compete for the Champions League, they're going to put even more of a premium on the goalkeeper position. So another thing that we put a big premium on are the questions from our listeners. You guys are fantastic sending in questions with the CalcioLand hashtag. Which ones are we going to go over today, Alex?
All right, Dave, let's start off with Roma, shall we? Why do they keep selling their best players even after finally resolving their FFP issues?
It's a great question. And look, you know, Roma, with the great run in the Champions League, the underrated sale of Emerson Palmieri in January to Chelsea, they put themselves in a much better financial position than they were in years past. Even Nainggolan wasn't really a deal that they had to do. But they felt with Nainggolan that this was the last year that they could get a big return on him. They wanted to make the team younger. So they got a good offer. Maybe some Roma fans wouldn't call it a good offer. I think it was a fair one, and they moved on. And I think with Alisson, it ultimately became like the Godfather. It was an offer that you can't refuse. They had made a huge profit on Alisson. The good news is, compared to Salah, they were dealing from a position of weakness with Salah. They had to sell him, and they probably could have gotten more. With Alisson, they really held out to get a big return as possible. They're making a massive profit on it. Their thinking is now, compared to Salah, they can actually reinvest the money and, you know, maybe build a better team for the future. The flip side is, look, a goalkeeper like Alisson, you know, he's still young. You'd be all set at the goalkeeper position for 7-8 years. So it is a big loss. But again, I think the return made it almost too hard to pass. But now, you know, it's all about how that money is going to be reinvested and if the team's going to be better or not.
All right, David, let's stay on Roma. What do you make of Roma reinvesting proceeds of sales of their best players into prospects and up-and-comers?
So we talked about it in the past few episodes. It's kind of like Roma's taking an approach like some NBA teams that are like, look, you know, the Golden State Warriors are going to win anyways. Let's try to set ourselves up for when those teams decline. And maybe Roma is trying to time it to say maybe Juve in 2 or 3 years isn't going to be the dominant force they are now. So we have to set ourselves up for the future. And look, you know, even though Roma is in a much better financial position with young players, you always have the potential for big resale values. That's kind of the Monchi formula. So I think it makes sense for them to approach this. Most of the players that they brought in this season are younger players, build a team for the future. They still have a very nice core. I think if they bring in Malcolm and that's the player that they've really identified as what they want to spend most of the Alisson money on, they're going to have a really intriguing attack. I mean, you look at Zeko under with Malcolm, with Patrick Schick, who I think is going to have a big comeback season. That's a really, really impressive attack. And look, the only one that's old out of those is Zeko. So they're setting themselves up quite nicely for the future. So look, it's definitely a big loss with Alisson. I think it's more, though, of a big loss on Twitter, taking the abuse on Roma being a supermarket. But maybe in reality, it ends up being good for them long term.
And I'll admit, in terms of Justin Kluivert, I am ready to eat crow and be wrong about Kluivert. I have called him overrated, much to do with who his father is and the fact that he was at Ajax and scored some great goals. But I almost want him to be really good. I think that will make Serie A even more exciting. So I'm very interested with Roma this season. So David, moving on, let's move to Milan. What did you make of UEFA overturning Milan's ban, and how much of an impact will playing in the Europa League have on their transfers for the rest of the summer?
Okay, so I'll tell you what, I was wrong about Ronaldo. I've been wrong about some other things in recent weeks. But one thing that I felt really good about, and I've been saying it since last winter, is that the minute the Elliott Fund was going to take over at Milan, the minute the club was going to start turning the corner and be much better off. And this was a huge win for Milan, make no mistake about it. I think the biggest difference on Milan overturning the UEFA ruling is that the owners no longer Lee Young-hong. We have no idea where the money's coming from. There's all this uncertainty on him having to pay back a loan at an exorbitant interest rate. Now there's the Elliott Fund, very solid financial situation. Maybe they won't be Milan's owners long term, but they'll find Milan some good owners. So great for Milan. I think Milan fans should be really excited because I really think today was the start of a lot of positive momentum. Look, some players are definitely going to be sold, but I still think overall this is really a great development for Milan. As far as the impact of the revenues of Europa League, I don't think that really makes a big difference. I'm not sure they can be much more ambitious than they were, but I wouldn't be surprised if you see Milan making 2-3 big sales. And, you know, I'm looking at Donnarumma, looking at Suso, looking at Bonucci. Today, Gattuso was asked about Bonucci, and he said, I'm going to do everything to keep him, but we also have to respect the players' wishes and decisions, which, you know, doesn't sound too encouraging, but I think Milan still has enough good young players that they'll be, you know, good long-term. And look, if they sell Donnarumma, Bonucci, Suso, something like that, I definitely think they can afford a big-name striker. And I'd really look to Alvaro Morata as that player. I think that could make sense. So we talked about it on Wednesday on Donnarumma potentially going to Chelsea. I don't think he's an ideal fit for Sarri, but clearly very talented. Also been linked to PSG. But, you know, they have Peperina, who, you know, is an adequate starter for sure. I don't think the drop-off from what we saw from Donnarumma last season, at least to Peperina, is that dramatic. But if you can bring in a really good striker that can score a lot of goals, that's really what Milan needs. So, look, you know, there's going to be probably some painful sales, but I do think right now Milan's going to start the journey to get back on track.
Okay. All right, next Twitter question. I kind of chuckle while reading this one. David, could Paul Pogba really return to Juventus?
Yeah, so there's been a lot of buzz on Pogba to Juve, or Pogba to Barcelona as well. And look, Di Marzio's been pretty clear about this. Also, he said it multiple times this summer. As far as he knows, he's staying at Manchester United. I definitely think it makes perfect sense for him to stay after the World Cup. I really think now Pogba, you know, Mourinho's kind of put in a corner. Like, he does have to get the most out of Pogba. I expect a huge season for him. I expect Pogba to be himself again, what we've seen with France, and that's going to be the best addition for Manchester United. Now, look, you know, I never expected Juve to be able to afford Ronaldo. I'd be very shocked if they could go after Pogba. There would have to be some significant sales for that to happen. I don't see it happen, but look, Juve surprised me as is with Ronaldo, but beyond that, I think Manchester United's committed to Pogba, and I think Pogba wants to make it work at Manchester United. It would look really bad for him, to me, in my opinion, to go back and forth between those two clubs again. And even leaving for Barcelona, it's like the second time where, maybe not his fault, but for two times that he didn't make it work at Manchester United. So I expect that he's going to get a real chance next season to do it, and I really expect him to do well.
I totally agree. I think he'll have a really good year. And I think a lot of people, though, whether Pogba has been underperforming or overperforming or whatever you want to call it, I think a lot of people did realize this World Cup, you can't judge Paul Pogba, who's a center mid, off goals and assists. But he does need to play better, and I agree. I think he will. So, David, let's kind of stay on Manchester United in a way. What's the latest on Alexandro?
I think we went two or maybe even three podcasts without talking about him. That's got to be a record. Look, it's about the same. It's what we've been saying for a while. It doesn't, you know, there's less momentum for him signing an extension with Juve. He has 2 years left on his contract. If there's ever a time to get a good return on him, it's now. Although he's coming off a bad season for his standard, there are just not that many good left backs on the market. I think there's a more than decent chance he'll be sold. Juve can make a good profit on him. They've amortized his 2 years of his transfer fee. They got him, you know, at the time it was a lot, but they've amortized a decent amount. I do think the clear favorite, though, to sign him is PSG. There hasn't been too much buzz about Manchester United. But look, you know, Juve, I'm sure, would be thrilled if Manchester United jumped back in. I don't think you could be any better off if you're selling a player than having a bidding war between PSG and Man United. But at the moment, PSG definitely looks like the likeliest destination.
All right, this next one is a pretty popular topic right now. Is it possible Juventus would consider selling Pjanic?
Yeah, this is an interesting one. And look, when the Ronaldo sale happened, and I was skeptical that it would from the get-go, you know, I was trying to think of which players Juve is going to have to sacrifice to kind of make the books work. I mean, keep in mind, Ronaldo alone is going to count for $85 million a season for Juve. To give you kind of a comparison, Higuain costs Juve $35 million a season when you count everything. And at the time, that was a huge sacrifice for him. And, you know, when I think Juve fans are like, you know, which players can we move? I don't think they're that upset to hear the rumors on Rugani, who's had his chances. Caldara came back. I don't think people are that upset with Higuain going. I thought he was a very good Juve player. But when you have Ronaldo, you know, he is expandable. I think most Juve fans are fine with those two. I think to a certain extent, they're okay with someone like Alexandro leaving because he's underperforming. If you spin it, well, you know, that's the cost of getting Ronaldo. I think people are okay with it. But once you get into some other players, I think then it becomes a whole other discussion. And I think Pjanic is definitely one of them. The midfield's been an Achilles heel for Juve. He's probably he's the most creative midfielder on Juve. I've never been a huge fan of his, but I thought last season he was quite good. But here's the reason for concern for Juve fans. I'm going to give you three. For one, Pjanic switched agents, and he went to Ramadani, a very powerful and influential agent. In my experience, when a player changes agents, it means one of two things. He's either looking for a rich extension or he's looking for a new team. And Ramadani has a lot of connections to make that happen. You know, he's been linked to Chelsea. You know, some fans have asked me, you know, which midfielder on Napoli last season is he most similar to? And I would say Jorginho, but I still think they could play together. He's been linked to Barcelona, who sees him as a great replacement for Iniesta, and I can see why. And he's been linked to Manchester City, who lost out to Jorginho. So those are three clubs with deep pockets. The other reasons why Juve fans should be concerned is we know that the club is all about the player's will. If Pjanic were to tell Juve, look, I want to go, I want to leave, it's hard for them to not grant that wish. And the third thing is the fact that Pjanic didn't cost Juve that much. He came on an exit clause for around $32 million, which they've amortized 2 years of. You can get a great profit on Pjanic. You know, say you got an offer for 70, 80 million for Pjanic, which is not to be excluded. You're looking at a really significant progress. Now, maybe all this is just to get an extension, and Juve would certainly be happy to do that, I would imagine. And, you know, last episode, someone asked us if the Ronaldo signing is going to mean that some Juve players are going to ask for a raise, and maybe this is what Pjanic is doing. So this is definitely one that I would monitor. So, you know, unfortunately, I wouldn't, if you're a Juve fan, I wouldn't exclude this as a possibility quite yet.
Very, very interesting. One to certainly monitor. All right, David, this next Twitter question. I went to my local pharmacy and I tried to see if there were Band-Aids for my heart, but so far I haven't found anything. So without further ado, what are the odds Eden Hazard leaves Chelsea?
Okay, so first the disclaimer. You know, I get that some of our listeners, the hardcore Serie A fans, and, you know, I love you guys, get upset when we talk about Premier League, Chelsea, especially. So a couple of things. Our podcast, it clearly says it in the description, we do talk about transfer news. I think during the season in Serie A, you guys know that we almost exclusively cover Serie A, but we do cover transfers. Chelsea, you know, has a manager, Sarri, near and dear to this podcast, and this is a huge transfer story. So I wouldn't be doing my job if I wasn't covering this. And, you know, our producers are Chelsea fans, so I know this isn't the most fun subject, but we have to talk about it. So on Wednesday, you know, we looked at Alex and I debated, you know, why would Hazard leave? And look, Real Madrid is always Real Madrid. Any year, I would never exclude for any player on any team if Real Madrid comes calling, that would be really attractive. I think Real Madrid is even more attractive to a player like Hazard because Ronaldo left. And he could realistically probably be the biggest star on the team if he goes there now. So that makes a lot of sense to me. But I also felt last season Dybala with Barcelona, once Neymar went, it was the perfect opportunity for him to go, and he stayed put. Now, Di Marzio and plenty of other people are reporting that Hazard is in talks with Real Madrid. Let's see what happens. I think this weekend we're going to see some more developments. There's going to be a meeting Real Madrid with Hazard's entourage. I've been getting a lot of tweets on the reported transfer fees, and you know, it looks like Courtois and Hazard are going to be separate deals. But again, I'm always a believer that when clubs do multiple deals together, you have to look at them together. And Courtois is an expiring contract, which makes his value lower. I would expect, you know, if you looked at the combined fees, if both go through, that you should take into account Courtois. So maybe Hazard would look a little bit less than that. And the other thing is, I would tell you, I wouldn't get so hung up on the reports on transfers about the transfer fee. Sometimes those are leaked depending on who the source is on a story. It's much more important to get the player movement right. So as it stands now, you know, I could see it as 50-50, him going or staying. I also think the fact that Chelsea isn't in the Champions League probably is a factor. Sarri certainly could get a lot out of him. But, you know, it kind of feels like a transition period for Chelsea as well. So let's see what happens with that. And again, for the hardcore Serie A fans, please forgive us on these Premier League talks, but also remember that this podcast is very effective at getting more people to follow Serie A. I always like to say that our underrated slogan of the podcast is come for the transfer news and stay for the culture.
Very well said. And I'll keep my response brief. It would just be an absolute crime if Maurizio Sarri and Jorginho come in, which is a huge gain for any team, David. It even could be a Serie A team. If you get Sarri and Jorginho, that's a huge gain. But then you lose someone like Eden Hazard, you're taking 10 steps back after taking 2 steps forward. That's how I'll leave it. So, David, let's move away from football. I really like this question. This week marked the 10th anniversary of the Dark Knight release. What are your favorite things about the film?
So I got a lot of thoughts on this one. Obviously, this is a movie that I've seen many times, as I would imagine a lot of the people listening. It's hard to believe that it's already been out for 10 years. So the first thing I'll say, and this is kind of a hot take, when I think of The Dark Knight, I really think Heath Ledger more than anything else. And look, obviously, everyone thinks of the Joker first. But I really think if you take the Joker, if there was not as compelling an actor playing that role, that movie, I mean, would really have a lot of problems. But I really think Heath Ledger is just incredible in that movie. Obviously, the fact that he passed away before it was released really increased the mythology of it. But that's really one of the most amazing performances of the past 10 years. You know, the only ones that I can think kind of comparable are Daniel Day-Lewis and There Will Be Blood, Joaquin Phoenix and The Master. But, you know, those are starring roles, and Heath Ledger does it as a supporting actor. So incredible. On the plus side of that movie, I think there are some action sequences in that movie that are absolutely breathtaking. Nolan, I mean, there's probably no director that can pull off some of the action scene, the first bank heist, then the one with the chase with the truck. Just absolutely mind-blowing what Nolan can do. So that's really what stands out to me. I do think there are some flaws. I think the plot, I mean, some of the things are really, really tough. I've asked you, Alex, before, if you tried to explain the plot of that movie, it gets pretty complicated. Before I ask you what you like about it, I wanted to point out there's this great podcast called The Rewatchables. It's on the Ringer Network where Bill Simmons worked. They did one on The Dark Knight with Sean Fennessy and Chris Ryan. This is such an incredible podcast. If you like The Dark Knight, go check that out. one thing that really stood out to me about that podcast that they talked about is how much the movie Heat is an inspiration to The Dark Knight. And I'm a huge fan of Heat, one of my favorite movies. Michael Mann's one of my favorite directors. Never dawned on me how many parallels there are between the two movies until I heard that podcast. The first bank robbery scene in The Dark Knight is very similar to the incredible bank scene in Heat. So if you haven't watched Dark Knight in a while and you like Heat, check that out. Knowing that, watch it with that prism. If you're very young and you're like, what the hell is Heat, and you don't even know what I'm talking about, definitely go check out that movie. You'll really see De Niro and Pacino, probably their last few great roles. The only movie they've done together other than Godfather 2. I know they did another one after that was terrible, but that one's really great. And it's really interesting, the parallels between the two. So, Alex, I know you're a fan of The Dark Knight and you're not old and grumpy like me. So maybe you have a better take than me. What are some of your favorite things about that movie?
Well, it's funny you just referenced the podcast called The Rewatchables, because if there's anything that The Dark Knight is, it's rewatchable. I have watched that movie maybe over 20 times, whether it's on a premium channel with no commercials or whether it's on a network station with commercials. I think it is so rewatchable. You referenced Heath Ledger. I mean, he was too good, David. You could argue he was too good as the Joker. He really took that role seriously. And it was just, I still remember, obviously he had passed away and that was awful, but sitting down to watch that movie, knowing that, okay, the guy who plays the Joker in this movie is no longer with us, that was chilling. That was truly I'm getting goosebumps right now just talking about it. And boy, was he really good. And then to give it to Christopher Nolan, the movie moved really well. I mean, halfway through the movie, it kind of felt like the ending in a way where everything was getting very climactic, yet it wasn't nearly over. It moves really well, which I think is why it's so rewatchable. So those are my opinions on it, David.
Awesome. So we're going to have an interview coming up with our friend Aaron Gelinella, and we'll get his take on that. So I want to take an opportunity to thank all our listeners. We had a great week. Podcast, a lot of listens, a lot of downloads. We really appreciate it. We're really growing. We're getting where we need to be. But we rely on you guys to be not only our marketing department, you guys promote us. Please keep doing that. You can support us by leaving us a review on iTunes. If you're listening to us on your iPhones, it takes 2 seconds for a 5-star review. I love reading the tweets you guys telling your followers about what we do. So I appreciate that. I also want to let you guys know I started writing columns for our friends at Euro Fantasy League who sponsor the podcast today. I wrote about the Serie A players to watch in the last month of the transfer window. So without further ado, I hope all our listeners have a great weekend. And let's end it with this, our interview with our friend Aaron Gelinella. For the interview part of the podcast, I'm thrilled to be joined by a great friend of the show. Some of you heard him on the Sarri special. Some of you heard him on the actual first appearance that he did. Today, we are joined by our great friend, Aaron Gelinella. You can follow him on Twitter at Redi Campagna. For those of you not familiar with Aaron, he's now scouting for DC United remotely. He recently moved to New York. He's going to be going to Columbia graduate school. I'm very jealous. Too smart of a guy to be on the podcast, but here he is anyways. So, Aaron, welcome back to Calcioland. It's great to have you back on, buddy.
Oh, thank you. I love being on here. This is one of my favorite podcasts, and I've had I've shared it with quite a few of my friends that are fans of the sport, even if they might not be so much in tune with Serie A, but all of them have glowing things to say about it. So it's great being back on here.
All right. You're too kind. So for those of you that aren't too familiar with Aaron, we usually have him on to talk about Napoli, but because he's also a scout, we're going to ask him about some Serie A players to be on the lookout for. You can probably use those too when we have our fantasy football league on EuroLeague.com. So, Aaron, before we get to Napoli, because of your affiliation with DC United, I have to ask you, how have things changed at the club since Wayne Rooney arrived?
So, almost overnight, it's been a completely different vibe, completely different dynamic around the club. Not only in training, but also because they're moving into the new stadium and everything. But there's a lot more buzz, a lot more people know and are tuning into DC just because of Wayne Rooney. So it's so interesting for me. I was actually at a couple of the practices since he came over. It's so interesting to see all these members of the media that we wouldn't normally see. We even had one or two people with scheduled interviews from the BBC come in and talk to Rooney after practice. So we're really enjoying the spotlight right now. And quite frankly, Rooney's been really impressing me in training so far. Like the work rate and just the intensity he brings to training is unreal. So we hope that that can inspire the players from here and kick it, pick up some more points.
Awesome. Very, very interesting. Let's shift gears. Let's get back to Serie A, talk a little bit about Napoli. I feel like we've talked on the podcast a lot about Sarri because, A, he's a favorite on the podcast. There was a lot going on with his move to Chelsea. But I really want to get into a little bit more with what's going to happen at Napoli with Ancelotti. Definitely a bold statement by Napoli to bring in, but I would imagine the team's going to be quite different. So I wanted to get your take on that. What can we expect from Napoli, and what do you think will be the main differences that we'll see with Ancelotti compared to Sarri?
So I agree. It's going to look completely different than last season, but I think it's a good thing. We've seen that Carlo is very, throughout the course of his managerial career, he's been such a great force at handling star players and taking pressure off these players. So I think we'll see more of a multifaceted approach to all competitions rather than just Serie A. I think that'll ultimately be best for juggling the squad we have because we have quite an abundance of midfielders and there's more depth than we're used to having at Napoli. And I'm expecting that he'll line up in a 4-2-3-1, but as he's shown from clubs over the years, if something's not working, he'll tinker it. And he's not entirely he's flexible where if something doesn't go right, I know that he'll tinker around with it a little bit. And I think that we'll see, like I said, starting with 4-2-3-1, defense besides goalkeeper should be relatively unchanged. The real question mark for me is the midfield, how he's going to fit all these midfielders into these spots.
Very interesting. I definitely agree with you on that. Look, we've seen Jorginho, who I think, you know, really represented Sarri ball as well as anyone, maybe Callejon being second, moving on. I think there's going to be some players who are definitely going to benefit from having Ancelotti, others not so much. So what's your take on that? Any players you think are going to dip in form and some who could potentially be better under Ancelotti?
So off the bat, I think Malik will be one of those key beneficiaries of Carlo's style. Verdi was brought in. I think that's pretty clear that he and Insigne are going to be providing service for him. And like I mentioned, I'm really unsure as to what the midfield pecking order is, but Fabian Ruiz seems ready for any midfield role. And obviously he was brought in to play a key role in the team, so I'm expecting him to thrive under that. Whereas on the flip side, I think Callejon, maybe Hamsik's roles will be reduced.
Yeah, I agree with you there. So you mentioned Milik. Let's jump to him right away. Today, De Laurentiis, in a very colorful fashion, which you wouldn't expect anything less from him, denied that Cavani would come because of cost. Same with Benzema. So I'm a big Milik guy. I picked him as the next superstar in the making in Serie A after Milinkovic-Savic. It sounds like, after all, Napoli are going to go with him. So what do you expect from him? You expect a big season?
Honestly, I'm saying 20-plus goals. I really believe in him. I believe in the pieces around him. And I think that his goal-per-game ratio is exceptional. Minutes-per-goal ratio, I should say, is exceptional. He's only started 3 matches in Serie A last year, only a couple in the season before. So we've never really seen him play a starting role with Napoli. But here's where I think he can thrive. And I know with some consistent starts, he'll be knocking in a bunch of goals.
Excellent. So I wanted to ask you about, you mentioned Fabian Ruiz, who comes very highly rated. I'm not that familiar with him, but I've heard great things. He seems to have been very impressive in Napoli's retreat so far, but I think some people, and I was kind of included when there was all this talk of Jorginho leaving, and first it looked like Manchester City, you know, I thought maybe Diarra is finally going to get his big chance. Do you see the signing of Fabian Ruiz as potentially a lack of faith in Diarra, or do you think maybe Ancelotti is going to sort it out and they'll both get a good opportunity?
There's always that fear, just because there are so many, only a little amount of spots we can fill with only a couple players, right? But the training dynamic so far appears great so far. Like, Diarra has already spoken in the media about how positive working under Carlo is. So it's not something I'm worried about. I hope that he gets a bigger role this season, and I'm hoping that Carlo will be more proactive in the rotation to ensure that he will do a good job of balancing these players.
So let me ask you about the goalkeeper position. Now, you know, Piperina had great leadership, a big fondness for the city of Naples, maybe even fondness for the underworld of the city of Naples. But I kind of felt he was a little bit of a liability, and I'm trying to be diplomatic here. So I didn't think it was a huge loss when he moved on, especially with Sarri leaving as well. He seemed, you know, like more of a better keeper for Sarri than, say, Ancelotti. And Napoli's approach, you know, and De Laurenti said it today as well, he's all about the young players. They invested significantly in Alex Meret, you know, a very highly rated prospect who only played about 15 games in Serie A, and he had injury concerns and got injured very quickly upon joining Napoli, and they brought in as a backup Carnesis, who's been a little bit up and down. So tell me your assessment of the goalkeeper situation. Do you see it any better than last season? Are you more confident, maybe less confident? So what's your take on all that?
First off, just wishing Pepe Reina the best, just because I have been so used to seeing him in a Napoli shirt, even though, like you alluded to, we were hoping for someone new to be brought in. So I guess it's an exciting period. Murray is very promising, but it's a lot of faith to place into him. I really hope he's up to the challenge. But that being said, I almost don't know what to expect. And so I guess we'll see.
Okay, so let's switch gears and talk in general about Serie A. This is a question I'm going to ask every guest that we have on before the season starts. So let's just talk about as the teams look right now. We have about three more weeks of transfers, but as things stand now, who do you think is the second best team in Serie A? I'm assuming you're putting Juve a notch above everyone else, but who do you see as the second best?
That's correct. I have to put Juve number one. I think number two is between Napoli and Inter, and quite honestly, I think that we've strengthened them quite well. And I really have a lot of faith in the squad, not only the signings, but a couple of the returning players. I think we have a good core group of players, and I think Napoli should target to finish. Well, of course, they should target to win the league, but second should be the minimum. I know that Inter is a club, like I mentioned, I'm a bit scared of, because they strengthened quite well, especially some of their free signings. But I really do believe in this Napoli squad.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. I'm very bullish on Inter, but that's pretty typical for me going into the season. So in your capacity as scout and also big expert of Serie A in general, not just Napoli, which players are you looking forward to seeing next season? Which ones do you think are really going to shine coming up?
Well, first, I'll get the obvious one out of the way. Like, my answer would not be complete if I left Ronaldo out. So I have to say, massive transfers for the league. So he's definitely going to be the focus of not just me, but so many people watching the league just to see how he does. But if we ignore some of the more, names that everyone knows, like Nainggolan at Inter, I'm sure he's going to be something to watch. I'm expecting big things from Kluivert with Roma. He was very promising with Ajax. Also, I'd love to see how Sampdoria's midfield copes losing Lucas Torreira. So Dennis Pryce in particular is a player that I've really enjoyed the way he plays. I see flashes of almost like an Iniesta type player in him. He was linked quite a bit with Juventus, I think, a couple months back. So we'll see how he does with that new look, Sampdoria. In addition to that, I think Giovanni Simeone on Fiorentina has put together two great campaigns. And I'm thinking that maybe this is the season he takes it to another level. And then finally, another club I have my eye on is Empoli. I think they should be very exciting because you have guys like Caputo, who's done quite well with his scoring record over the past few years, and Mija Zajac, who's someone I'm tipping to be a breakout player. He's young, he's very competent and great at scoring from midfield, so I think he's one to watch as well.
Excellent picks. It's interesting that you mentioned Pryor a few months ago. As you mentioned, Juve was interested in him, and it's very interesting that of the players on Sampdoria, they like Pryor a lot more than Torreira, and not a lot of people would probably agree with that, because Torreira really is a brilliant player, but it's interesting that you mentioned him, and I can see why. So let's shift gears completely. I really love getting your pop culture questions for the podcast. Once in a while, we chat offline about albums or movies. So Alex and I already talked about it at the, towards the end of the podcast. This week's the 10th anniversary of Dark Knight. So aside from Heath Ledger, which I think is a given as one of the favorite things in the movie, what stands out to you in that film that makes you want to watch it over and over again like me?
So something that always stays with me about The Dark Knight is the soundtrack. They brought two extremely different composers together, Zimmer and Howard. And to me, the impact of their music just sets the mood better than many films I can think of. And it's often during the film, there's like this blurring the line between what soundtrack and what sound design. And I just thought it created tension extraordinarily well throughout the film. So that's something that whenever I'm watching it, I'm just always on edge. You know, when they're playing the Joker's theme, always on edge with some of the action scenes in the film. And I think a lot of that has to do with the great composing.
Excellent. Anything else that you realize? That's actually a really good shout that I haven't thought of. Anything else that you like? Any maybe flaws in it that you see?
One other thing I like is just that over time, The Dark Knight holds up very well as a movie in general, not just a superhero movie. I feel like quite a bit of superhero movies fall into the same, you know, they fall into the same sort of story. And you're expecting the same formulaic plot and everything, you know, and there's the action and everything's resolved at the end and you walk away from it and it's just as ubiquitous as five or six other superhero films. But I think that The Dark Knight is just in a totally different category of its own. And it just holds up quite well. Even if you were to show it to someone that's not super into superhero films, they would be able to tell you how much it stands out.
Fantastic. Well, listen, Aaron, it's always a pleasure to have you on. We covered all bases, Rooney in the U.S., Napoli, Serie A, Dark Knight. So you're a perfect guest for the podcast. I really want to thank you for joining us. Everyone follow Aaron at Radi Campania. Always brings it with very interesting takes. So, Aaron, thank you so much for joining us, and I look forward to chatting with you in the near future.
Thank you. Forza Napoli.